Last week on Wings, you heard about women who work in other women's homes. This week, it's women who do labor in their own homes and how they can get fairer conditions and pay.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
In May 2022, Australia's Labor Party regained control of the national government for the first time since 2013. One of the first changes the party made was to reinstate federal funding for Ethical Clothing Australia. Started in 2000, this organization worked with both unions and industry to set standards for home-based work. They'd provide a label for products that meet the standards. From the Wings Archive, here's a report from Women on the Line.
Welcome to Women on the Line, Community Radio's National Women's Current Affairs program, produced at 3CR Community Radio in Melbourne and broadcast on the Community Radio Network. I'm Beck Zajac. Most people assume the clothes we wear are made in factories overseas. In fact, there is still a clothing industry operating right here in Melbourne. Interestingly, the Textile Clothing and Footwear Union estimate that 70% of the clothing made in Australia is not made in factories, but in people's homes. The clothes are made by women and men, commonly referred to as home workers or outworkers. Most outworkers are non-English-speaking migrant women. They frequently receive between $5 and $7 an hour for their work, even though the legal award rate is over $18. Many have been working for years for up to 100 hours a week with no job security, benefits, sick leave, or fixed hourly wages. That is, until they come into contact with organisers from the Textile, Footwear and Clothing Union, who routinely conduct investigations on textile companies, during which time they come across these workers and help them claim their benefits. Those investigations by unions are frequently prompted by the work of Ethical Clothing Australia, a non-profit accreditation body. Today on the show, we speak to Sabina Crawley from Ethical Clothing Australia and Beth McPherson from the Textile Clothing and Footwear Union about their work. But first, we'll speak to Hong Nguyen, who has worked as an outworker in the textile industry in Melbourne for the last 16 years, and who worked for 11 years on $6 an hour with no entitlements until she was introduced to the union through Ethical Clothing Australia. Hong's name has been changed to protect her identity. Her words will be translated by union organiser Lee Nguyen. Hong and Lee, thanks so much for joining us.
Yes.
Hong, could you start off by talking about what you do for work and when you started working in the industry?
Okay, I came here in 1995, and after 2 years, I'm work at home as a night worker because I need to look after my children.
Okay, and where did you come from?
I came from Vietnam.
And how did you get involved in the industry? How did you find that work?
Thì mới là khi ở bên đảo, ở bên Đà Thị Lan quá, thì tại vì chị cũng...
Yeah, so after I came in here, I stay home for the first 2 years looking after my children. But then I need to find a job to make money to look after for my family. So that's why I think that as an art worker, I can be home, do some work, and look after my children. So one of my brother, so the brother-in-law, he used to work at home, and he introduced me and get involved in this work and tried to find some work for me at that time.
And did you know who you were working for?
Yeah, so my brother-in-law introduced me to the company directly. So after that, I just come to the factory to get the work by myself.
You've now been in touch with the Textile Clothing and Footwear Union, so I've been told you've been put on union wages and conditions. But could you talk about the conditions that you used to work in before that happened?
Yeah, so before the union and also the company that didn't get accredited with ECA. I didn't have wages, so I worked on pace, so I get per gallon. But now it's much better, so I'm on wages, and I get super work cover, and I also other entitlements.
So for about 15 years, you worked with none of those benefits?
About 11 years.
And so it was piecework, but how much do you think it worked out per hour in the end?
So I estimate it's around $6 per hour. Yeah, we can estimate around $6, $7 per hour.
And how many hours do you think you used to work a week?
So I work fairly long hours, so around 50 to 60 hours per week, including weekends. If I get sick, then I couldn't work on that day and I couldn't get paid, so it's no work, no money. Yeah, so nothing, no entitlement before.
And at the time, were you aware that this was a breach of your rights as a worker?
No, I don't know at that time because no one told me.
Do you know what would happen if you asked for better pay or shorter hours?
Yeah, at that time a lot of our workers around. And it's worth like bargain, you know, like we have to agree whatever the boss say. So we can't get better. We can ask for more money. Because if we ask for more money, but the other person, or the other workers saying that, you know, they can get cheaper pay, you know, like cheaper price or something, so we're going to lose the job. So that's why I have to accept whatever the boss says.
And so how did you first come to be in touch with the Textile Clothing and Footwear Union, and what happened when you were first in touch?
In 2011, the union came to my house and introduced me about ethical clothing or trade program. And at that time, I told them that I work on pieces and how much that I get paid per piece. And they said that it's not okay. And they explained to me about my working condition and what I should get. So after that, the union helped me to talk to the boss and get the company, because the company applied for accreditation, so they have to do the writing. And my condition get improved better and better.
What are some of the main differences between your life now compared to your life then?
Yeah, so before, it's very stressful to work because we work very hard, very long hour, less money, and also I don't know whether we have job to do after we deliver the work. Yeah, but now the job is more secure. We got wages every week, and we know that the work gonna be available for us after we deliver.
Obviously, there's still quite a lot of workers out there that were working in the conditions you were working in. What's your message to those workers?
So I just want to say to all the our workers that work from home but haven't got the good condition, that they should believe in the union and believe in the power of the collective power, because and they also need to speak up. So speak to the union person or the union organizer about their situation, their working condition, and they will get help.
So the government has recently cut the funding to Ethical Clothing Australia. Do you have a message for the government?
Yeah, so I hope that the government keep this funding, because without this funding, we worry that the company going to back to their work before, like they're going to cut our condition and pay like before. So we really, really hope that we have this funding so the union can keep helping us. And because we are very poor and we are not English, like non-English speakers, so we don't know about the law and we don't know what what our rights and things like that. So with the funding, we have someone to talk to us and someone let us know about the condition and let us know something wrong. So, yeah, we really want that the government going to reinstate that funding for to support the our workers. So without the union, the boss going to go back to their way and we're going to be the one that exploit, like being exploited. So that's what our message to our train to the government. Yeah, That's it.
Okay, that's great. That's really amazing to hear from you. So I really appreciate you talking to me.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Hong Nguyen, who has worked as an at worker in the textile industry in Melbourne for the last 16 years. Hong's name has been changed to protect her identity, and her words were translated by union organiser Lee Nguyen.
Come all you good workers, good news to you I'll tell of how the good old union has come in here to dwell. Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on?
On Wings, the topic is fairness for home-based workers and the combined roles of the non-profit accreditation organization Ethical Clothing Australia and the powerful Textile Clothing and Footwear Union of Australia. Their combined efforts have been continuous since the year 2000, but were not helped by 9 years of Conservative national government. These interviews from Women on the Line were recorded by Beck Zajac in 2014, shortly after the Conservative Party retook the reins of the nation.
On community radio stations around Australia, you're listening to Women on the Line. Ethical Clothing Australia is a not-for-profit accreditation body which was launched in 2010 by the Labor government to enforce the Home Workers Code of Practice. Home workers or outworkers are the women and men who work for Melbourne's textile industry out of their own home. Most of them are non-English-speaking migrants who have been working for years for up to 100 hours a week for well below the legal award wage, with no job security or entitlements. Legally, it's the obligation of the employer to make sure their factories are compliant, but according to the ECA and the TCFU, employers are frequently in breach of their legal obligations. Unlike the union, which is an investigative body, ECA works directly with factories to help them become compliant. Since it was established, it has conducted compliance checks on over 90 companies, ranging from Q, Australia's largest manufacturer of women's wear, to emerging labels like Otto and Spike. They've helped get better conditions for thousands of workers. In June this year, the ECA's entire budget was cut. Today we're speaking with Sabina Crawley, the ECA's accreditation advisor. Thanks for joining us, Sabina.
Thank you so much for having me.
Could you begin by telling us how and why Ethical Clothing Australia began to work in this area?
Basically, the reason that we exist is back in the 1990s, there were various campaigns that were run by the Textile Clothing and Footwear Union and Fairwear, who's a local activist organisation, also an international activist organisation. The campaign was to expose the hidden world of outworkers in Australia. Most people in Australia would think that clothing is made in factories, but in fact, the Textile Clothing and Footwear Union estimate that about 70% of clothing is actually made in people's homes. And home workers are predominantly migrant women for whom English is a second language, and they generally receive well below the legal award rates of pay. So things such as superannuation, work cover, holidays and annual leave have mostly been absent.
So where does the law fit into this issue?
Outworkers that work from home in the textile clothing and footwear sector are entitled to the same minimum legal conditions as factory workers. So So there's certainly laws protecting home workers in the industry, but unfortunately they're really followed. They certainly are breaching workplace law, Fair Work Act, which covers all workers in Australia, and the Textile Clothing and Footwear Award, which governs the industry.
And is it most of the major fashion companies that are involved in this kind of practice?
I mean, based on my personal experience, I've been at ECO for 3 years now, and I have rarely come across with the amount of companies that have come through a company that was legally compliant at the start of the process.
I think a lot of people would think that their clothes that they're buying are made in factories overseas.
Yeah, I think certainly the majority of clothing, sadly, is made overseas. But mm-hmm. I think it's really important to emphasise that there still is a really thriving local manufacturing industry. And that's one of the things that Ethical Clothing Australia is very much about, is promoting local manufacturing and supporting and promoting the ethical businesses that are doing it right.
So if you could talk us through, so what is the compliance procedure that companies go through with you?
Sure. Once a company signs up and has an open application, basically we would send their details to the TCFUA compliance officer, and they would make a suitable time to meet with that clothing label or footwear manufacturer, and we would send them a compliance checklist that outlines all these sorts of things that the compliance officer will look at. So wages, super, work, cover, and the compliance officer can help them complete all the required documentation that they're required to do under the law. Then the compliance officer will, if they're not legally compliant, assist them with getting the wages and super, etc. in place, and then they will make a time to visit all of their supply chain.
Right, so, and it's generally companies come to you then, so it's not, you don't go out looking for the companies that are exploiting their workers.
We don't, because we're an accreditation body, we're not an investigative body, so we're not out searching for non-compliant workplaces. Generally, we have businesses come to us, and we're finding more and more that, you know, it's very much a part of clothing labels' marketing mix. They want to be known as an ethical label, especially the emerging designers. It's sustainability and ethics is very much what they want to put across, which is great.
We mentioned funding at the beginning, so tell us what's happened with your funding lately.
We've been funded by the Department of Employment, but unfortunately the funding was stopped as of 30th of June. And the reasoning behind it, interestingly, was that they saw it as their commitment to reducing red tape for business. They considered that ECA accreditation created red tape and confusion, which is contradictory because we were actually set up to help businesses understand the law. We understand that laws are complex. And as far as I'm aware, we're the only organisation which actually provides a whole heap of free tools and goes out and sits down with businesses. When you have a situation as we currently have, where the government has repealed ECA's funding, that basically signals a message to business that they can be non-compliant with the law. We're still continuing. We're looking at how we can continue and how we could get our funding reinstated.
Great. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Sabina.
Thanks for the opportunity for ECA to be on your show. Thanks so much, Beck.
Thank you.
That was Sabina Crawley, the Accreditation Advisor for Ethical Clothing Australia, a not-for-profit that works to end the exploitation of outworkers in Australia.
For more about Ethical Clothing Australia, visit the website ethicalclothingaustralia.org.au. In May 2022, the Labour Party came back into power. In June, they restored funding for Ethical Clothing Australia, and in July, they raised the national minimum wage to $21.38 an hour. At international exchange rates, that's about 15 US dollars, 19 Canadian dollars, and 12.6 euros or British pounds. Again, here is Beck Zajac of Australia's Women on the Line.
Now we're joined by Beth McPherson, organiser for the Textile Clothing and Footwear Union. The union works with Ethical Clothing Australia in order to improve the conditions of home workers in the textile and clothing industry. Beth, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So we've just talked to Sabina from Ethical Clothing Australia. How does your work with outworkers fit in with the work of the ECA?
The union's main role is to check that workers' pay and conditions meet the legal standards and two, also ensure that they're working in a safe environment.
Sabina told us about the compliance work that ECA does. Could you talk us through the process of what happens when a company is referred to you for one of those compliance audits?
When a company is referred to us, we then go and meet with the company and get some information looking at where they give the work, and then the union checks all the steps within the supply chain. So all the people that work goes to, we go and visit them and look at whether they're paying the correct wages and whether the environment are safe.
And you've mentioned to me before that often the supply chain is quite complicated and that the company who's doing the employing doesn't actually know all the steps in the supply chain. Could you just explain how that works a little bit?
That's correct. There's a number of companies, most of the companies that we've dealt with, they give us the information about who they directly engage, so who they give the work directly to. So when we go and then investigate, we sometimes find those people in turn are giving out work. So instead of being one tier or one level to the work, there tends to be multiple levels to the work. So multiple people involved. And by the time it gets to the outworker who is actually doing the work, in majority of cases, they are getting well below the minimum rates of pay.
And so those workers are essentially that their employer would be this kind of contractor as opposed to the factory at the top.
Yes.
Okay, but the factory at the top, do they know what's going on in those lower levels of the supply chain, in your opinion?
No, they don't, but it's their legal obligation to understand where their work's going. Obviously, a lot of the outworkers are hidden, and so sometimes it takes different ways that we find out that these outworkers exist. For instance, it may be the worker themselves contacts the union. It may be a competitor, another company, mm-hmm. that alerts us. It might be a consumer that's concerned about, you know, in their neighbourhood they've seen a sweatshop or that they believe that something untoward's going on around the corner, and they'll let us know. We get anonymous letters from workers identifying what the issues are and requesting for us to investigate.
Wow. And how widespread are these practices and how many women are working as outworkers?
So we've dealt with thousands of outworkers and been able to rectify their wages and conditions of employment. And, you know, there's far greater outworkers out there.
So who's supposed to be enforcing these laws if you weren't stepping in?
Well, the award sets the criteria about what they have to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's the obligation of the employer to make sure that they meet those legal obligations. And if they're not and the union becomes involved, then we will then move to get those things rectified.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a number of ways we do that. One is through consultation with the company. And sometimes it takes a bit more pressure than that. So the union's got the right to lodge prosecutions in the federal court if companies breach these conditions.
And have you had to do that frequently?
Yes.
How do these companies justify these practices?
There's varied excuses and there's various reasonings behind it. You know, some of them say they weren't aware of these provisions. These mm-hmm. provisions have been around since, you know, 1982. Others don't believe that they should have to. They think that if someone works at home that they should be able to pay them less.
So do outworkers ever sort of protest their conditions on their own, and what's the response been to them if that's ever happened?
Generally no, because they are... Outworkers are fearful that there will be repercussions to them personally. So even with ones that speak up at Senate inquiries or test cases or whatever it may be, always want their identity protected. The reason for that is that companies will cut them off, stop giving them work, and that's their livelihood.
What's the reaction that you usually get when you go and talk to them and explain to them that you you know, can help them get out of this situation?
A lot of times they don't believe us because they've been in this environment for such a long time that they, it's like listening to fairyland, you know, they just can't believe that they'd actually have time off and get paid, or they'd actually get about $18 an hour. They just have no concept of that would be possible. And so when we're able to achieve it, it's so rewarding because the worker just cannot believe it. They can't believe that they've actually got these things. It changes their life.
Yeah, I can't imagine. And what else could improve this situation? Are there specific legislation or policy that would be helpful, or that people could be campaigning for if they're interested in supporting your campaigns?
You know, obviously we're continuing to battle off attacks from the Conservative government to reduce these protections for our workers. So that's really important that people understand that these conditions aren't something outrageous. What they are is allowing people to just get the living wage and to work in safe environments.
Okay, well, that's really informative, Beth, and thank you so much. And it sounds like the union's doing some incredible work.
Thank you.
That was Beth McPherson, organiser for the Textile Clothing and Footwear Union of Australia.
For more about Ethical Clothing Australia, visit the website ethicalclothingaustralia.org.au. As of 2020, the number of home-based outworkers in Australia was estimated to be between 35,000 and 45,000. Most still don't have regular employment, fair wages, or benefits like superannuation, as old age pensions are called in Australia. One worker who contracted to make masks during COVID told ABC National News that she was offered 80 cents apiece, and that even for a skilled worker like herself, it amounted to about $7 an hour. She negotiated to get minimum wage for that urgent order, but received no further work from that contractor.
Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on?
Women on the Line is Community Radio's National Women's Current Affairs program. It's produced and presented by a range of women broadcasters from 3CR in Melbourne and broadcast nationally on the Community Radio Network. The theme music for Women on the Line is Slideshow at Free University by La Tigra. And Which Side Are You On? Is sung by Natalie Merchant.
Which side are you on, boy? Which side are you on?
Thank you to Women on the Line Australia for sharing their shows with Wings. You can find their recent episodes on the website of Community Radio 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to 3cr.org.au/womenontheline. They also list contact information at facebook.com/womenontheline. Wings is on Facebook too, facebook.com/wingsradio. Our email is wings@wings.org. Wings thanks all our supporters, including your local community radio stations, Suzette Cullen and Genevieve Vaughn, whose online events can be viewed at maternalgifteconomymovement.org. That's all one word, maternalgifteconomymovement.org. The Wings sound logo is from Lee Bonas's album A Circle Is Cast. I'm Wings series producer Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.